Hi, I'm Perry, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists answer your beauty product questions and give you an insider's look at the cosmetic industry. This is episode 306. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, and with me today is the lovely Valerie George. Hello, Valerie.
Hi, Perry.
You're up early today.
I am. That's how well, I'm up early every day. I'm an early bird,
There you go. Well, on today's show, we're going to answer questions about how the temporary hair color works, that's produced by Schwarzkopf, whether a skin lotion ingredient can be used to protect your leather shoes, is it worth spending money on an expensive flat iron, does encapsulated sunscreen work, and what do we think of the ordinary peptide lash boosters? Another lash booster question, huh?
Yeah, another one. These must be surging in popularity.
They must be. But before we get to that, Valerie, you had a trip to San Francisco?
I did. The Society of Cosmetic Chemists meeting was in San Francisco a couple days ago, and I went up for the meeting.
They usually have those in LA, right? So, you know, for our international listeners, how far a drive is it to San Francisco from LA?
Well, I feel like most people not from North America think, you know, it's New York and then Texas and then California, but California is pretty, you know, pretty isolated, but a pretty big state. When you drive, it's about 6 hours.
Okay.
Without traffic.
Sure.
Yeah, not bad. It's a really nice trip through the valleys of California's irrigated farmland.
California is big, and it holds about a pretty sizable chunk of our country's population.
Yeah, but the meeting was very good. I got the chance to meet one of our big-time fans, Myra, who was so surprised to see that I was there.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
San Francisco's got all those big hills, too, huh?
They do.
The meeting on the hill, or was it on, like, a nice lowland?
Well, you know, it was, like, in their downtown area, so it was, you know, pretty flat where I was at, and then, you know, the meeting was like on the rooftop bar. It was pretty cool.
It's one of those cities where you get tired walking up the street. It's just it's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, but it's a good exercise to walk around there.
It is, and a fun town. All right, why don't we move on to beauty science news? Valerie, did you see the news about Revlon?
I did. They filed for bankruptcy. What does that mean?
Well, it turns out, they're preparing to file for Chapter 11 here in the U.S. because they have an upcoming debt repayment of $1.7 billion, and apparently they're operating at a loss, so they're having a tough time to cover those bills.
Yeah.
The interesting thing to me about, when, you know, it's just a company and it goes bankrupt, but what does that really mean to all the fans of the Revlon products? Because, you know, maybe they're not selling a lot, but that's still a pretty big brand, right?
Yeah. Well, when I used to think of bankruptcy as a kid, you know, I thought that meant like businesses had to close, right? Like the bank comes and locks your doors and takes all your assets. And it turns out that's not really how it works. But then the Toys R Us happened, and they disappeared, right?
Yeah. Lots of, like, Radio Shack disappeared. Like, lots of places do disappear. But I guess sometimes the brands will stick around.
Yeah. How does that get determined?
Yeah. I wonder. I mean, I think you can sell off a brand. I know the company that bought Alberto Culver, where I worked, Unilever, they essentially bought the brands because they sold off all of the manufacturing. They sold off all the land that our company had, and they just bought the brands and the formula. So I imagine that somebody could just buy the Revlon brand, and then they'll start making it. And so they won't get all the debt. They'll just be able to make the product, sell the product, and get the profit if they can make it profitable. I mean, I think what this will just mean for the people who worked at Revlon, you know, a lot of those will probably get laid off or they'll get scooped up by another company that buys the company.
Yeah.
But it's tough to say. But this is such a big brand. I don't imagine it's going to be gone from the market.
And it was actually Revlon many years ago, about 100 years ago, along with Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein, that actually set the precedent for how cosmetics are marketed today. So yeah. this company's been around for a while, and it hasn't always been, you know, more on the economic side. You mentioned, can the company be profitable? Their prices are pretty low, and it's getting harder and harder to produce products at a cost-effective rate. So who knows if this can be turned around, but I guess that's what the experts are for. The financial experts come in and take a look at it and see what's happening.
Yeah. Whenever a brand has a big fan base, though, you should be able to make money at that in the beauty business. Unless yeah. you're like the VO5 hairdressing where, you know, when I was working on that brand, the big concern about the brand managers was that our audience was mostly dying because it's very, very popular with the senior set, but
yeah.
we couldn't grow the brand small. You know what brand was able to do that? They made that turnaround was the Old Spice brand.
Oh, really?
Well, Old Spice was like an old person's brand, and somehow P&G was able to get some advertising agency to come out with a fresh new look at Old Spice, and it's sort of more of a hip brand now, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they had a great marketing team and put some money behind that.
Yeah, but that doesn't always work.
No.
You know what else doesn't always work?
What?
When Olaplex launches something in Walmart, or at least that's what I thought.
Yeah, well, I think there was an oopsie news article that hit the web, right? And it's now been retracted.
Yeah, well, in this trade journal that I read, the headline was, and I was very surprised by this, but the headline was, Olaplex PH Plex hits Walmart shelves, and they were selling a kit for $4.95 for the three-step kit. And I thought that was very shocking. Like, wow, this salon brand is going to Walmart.
They went downhill fast. Yeah.
Right. And I didn't catch it, but Valerie, you did when I gave you the link.
I'm a little familiar with these products, yeah.
The link wasn't working for you. And then I showed you the product, and you're like, hey, this isn't Olaplex.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Perry was like, it's so weird. They're using malic acid technology. And I was like, oh, that's anyone can use that technology. L'Oreal used it before their brand was shut down through an injunction. Wella uses it. It's pretty common. But it turns out it's just a different brand trying to emulate Olaplex.
Definitely. I mean, it looks like Olaplex, a three-step thing. And it is available. I'm not sure if this product's available in Walmart. It's available in Amazon. The malic acid technology, I don't think it's as notable as the bisaminopropyl diglycol dimaliate that Olaplex uses. And I would have been a bit surprised. I mean, Walmart is going to get you a lot of distribution, but boy, that $4.95 price point, that's taking a cut in the profits, right?
Yep. That's funny. Gotta look closely, I guess.
You do. It's easy to emulate another brand's packaging.
Yeah.
All right, and there's one final thing that I saw.
Uh-huh.
P&G made a big splash about launching some new shampoo bars with their Head & Shoulders, their Pantene, and their Herbal Essences brand. Their whole focus is on reducing plastic waste, and by launching solid shampoo products that are wrapped in paper, I guess, or cardboard.
Okay.
They're figuring they're on their way to get rid of all plastic bottles by 2030 or something like that.
Oh, wow.
That's their goal. You know, I was looking at this shampoo bars, and I was trying to, they say that's the high performing shampoo bars, and I don't know. I'm a little skeptical of that. Can you have a good shampoo bar?
You know, I haven't found any that I've liked. There are some that are better than others, but they all have some typical downfalls to them. They can be very hard to distribute through the hair, difficult to rinse from the hair because surfactants have low water solubility typically. So I haven't found any that I'm in love with.
Well, if anybody's going to launch it, I think one of these big companies dedicated to put it, they put a bunch of people on it and come up with a bunch of formulas, and they'll have access to all the latest new supplier raw materials. Mm-hmm. So if anyone's going to do it, it's probably one of these big companies. I wouldn't expect some indie brand in their kitchen to whip up a really great soap bar. Or even the brand Lush, who has sort of led the way in this technology. They don't seem to me as a technology company. They're more they're more innovative in their marketing, of course. But P&G, you know, they invest a lot of money in R&D. So I'm skeptical about these shampoo bars. But hey, you know, if anyone's going to do it, these big guys could do it.
Yep.
And when they come out, we'll try them. Right now, it looks like they're only out in Europe.
Well, maybe they'll come to the U.S. soon, or I'll pick some up when I'm in Europe.
Valerie, before we get to our listener questions, we had a listener comment from somebody on Patreon. This one comes to us from Vivian. She says, I am your biggest fan, Beauty Brains, no matter what anyone else says. So, Timothy, if you're listening, she says, I bought the books. I bought his limited batch of shampoo. Oh, that's when I launched that shampoo line called Feek, which was more of a demonstration of how you launch a line. So she says, I was a true fan, or so I thought. Then I realized I never purchased VO5, Tresemme, or Nexxus.
She's not the biggest fan.
God wanted me to realize my shortcoming because after this week's episode, I walked into the 99-cent store and found a row of this VO5 shampoo, bought the strawberry shampoo and conditioner, which is the one that I personally worked on, strawberries
and cream. Wow.
And they look like smoothies that I want to drink. Exactly. They were $1.20 a bottle. I laughed so hard. I listened to Perry telling his plain talk about why Nexxus exists. it's the most unsparing, unsentimental matter of fact of telling the birth of a corporate shampoo brand. thank you, Perry, for leaving the podcast as your real legacy, sharing your nerdy joy with everyone. And thank you for introducing us to Randy and Valerie. Well, thank you for those comments, Vivian. She has been a longtime fan. She remembers Randy.
Yeah, but what did she say about the shampoo? Has she tried it?
She did not. Actually, she did not say she tried the shampoo, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, she would have. I feel like she had to.
I'm sure she loved it.
Yeah, I just forgot to tell us about it.
Exactly. You know, speaking of Patreon, if you want to support the show, we don't have any ads because we have Patreon supporters. And if you want to support us, go to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe. And speaking of that, Valerie, there was talk of a giveaway this month.
Today's the day. We are going to announce the winner of our patron product giveaway, our first one we've ever done, where we partnered with the brand Vrea Cosmetics, which has the 4-in-1 concealer, SPF 30, the first concealer of its kind. Awesome eye goals, eye masks, which I personally love. They're the best under eye masks on the market, and their new product that's launching next month. Our lucky winner is going to get one set of those.
All right, you ready to pick it?
Yay, let's go.
Our winner. So this is what I did. I went through and I took all of our patrons and I put them on a spreadsheet. And so everybody got randomly listed. So you have a number associated with you. And now we're picking a random number generated from the universe. And here we go.
Drum roll.
Random number picked.
Who is it?
All right. And now I'm looking up the corresponding number. The random number, in case you were wondering, was number 90, which... incidentally, is also the element thorium, because I've memorized the periodic table. The winner today is Lorena E. Lorena E. will be our winner today, and we will be in contact with you to get that to you.
Great. Yeah, we'll get your information, and then we'll put you in touch with the brand Vrea Cosmetics, V-R-E-A Cosmetics, and you'll get your 4-in-1 concealer, under eye masks, eye goals, and their new product. We're so excited for you to have one.
So we'll do this in the future. We've done past giveaways, but we'll have another one coming up soon. And we thank everybody for their support on Patreon. our first question comes to us from Naomi on Patreon, and she asks, have you guys seen this new temporary color from Schwarzkopf? Any idea how it works? I've tried finding an ingredient list and an SDS, but have had no luck. It almost looks like thermochromic liquid crystal to me. Any insight would be appreciated. Schwarzkopf, that's a brand out of Germany, huh?
Yeah, and they actually did not develop this technology. They're very transparent about it on their website. They developed it with a company called The Unseen, and I actually had the opportunity to meet with The Unseen a handful of years ago when they came forth that they had this technology and wanted to bring it to the market for hair care. They actually worked.
So were you able to see them?
I did not. Oh God, I get it. Okay.
Sorry.
Sorry to derail the show. That's all right. This colorant had previously been used in textiles. All this information was available on their website. And they were looking to get into hair because it's pretty cool, the technology, where from one angle, the hair color looks light, and from another angle, it looks dark.
Cars have that kind of paint, like a dichromic paint, right?
Exactly.
You know, like a blue and purple car.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little like that, where these pigment molecules are attaching to the hair. They don't actually penetrate the hair. It's not with oxidative technology, so you're not going to add oxygen to it to get them to develop. They're a different type of direct dye pigments that stick to the outside of the hair fiber, and depending on, you know, is it cold out? Is it windy out? You know, you'll get different color changes depending on what's going on.
Is the color change a result of the temperature that it's exposed to, or is it a result of the angle at which somebody's looking at it, or is it all of those things?
I think it's all of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few different, they have a handful of different colorants that Schwarzkopf helped them bring to market. So pretty cool.
This is only the kind of thing you could do on a temporary color, though, because it's a surface coating.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a physical pigment. You actually can feel it, I think, on the hair fiber. And if you're experienced at feeling hair, but it's very cool.
I hope nobody sprays it in their eyes.
And no one should be putting this on their eyelashes.
Right. Don't put it on your eyelashes. You know, I know some people who use like permanent hair color on their eyebrows and eyelashes.
A lot of people do that.
It seems like a bad idea.
It's actually not allowed in the United States. This is another example where the U.S. is a little different than Europe, but the U.S. does not permit oxidative colorants for the eyebrows or the eyelashes, but it's allowed in Europe.
Wow, there you go.
It's another thing where the U.S. is a little more strict.
Wow. People think the U.S. is unregulated. Go figure.
Yeah.
All right. Our next question.
Well, we have another off-topic chemistry question from Vivian, our biggest fan. Leather conditioner Q. During the quarantine, I have become very interested in different hobbies that all seem to have one thing in common: conditioning, woodworking, leather care, nail care, hair care. They all require good conditioners to make them last a long time. I obviously have a PhD in conditionerology thanks to the Beauty Brains. My PhD thesis was on quats and my shiny, beautiful hair. Why am I still single? I was looking in how to break in my pastel boots, and it looks like the leather conditioners are in the dark ages. Your choices are mink oil, which is musty smelling, leather darkening, possibly cruel sourcing practices, or neem oil made from hoof oils, but also the same smelly problem. They seem to be solving for leather's unique properties, which involve not rotting easily and penetration issues. As people who like know this issue for hair, am I wrong here? Should I just suck it up and cover my light pink docks in mink or neem oil, or can I just go the route I go for in my skin, petrolatum?
Well, that is an interesting question, and I will preface this by saying I don't know anything about conditioning leather except what I've read on the internet.
Well, it's like skin, right?
Well, yeah, and what I can glean from my years of work in the cosmetic industry on skin, which is very much like leather,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, especially if you've had a tanning obsession over the years, your skin eventually will turn to leather.
Certainly leathery.
Yeah.
And that is kind of a clue as to whether your idea of using petrolatum is a good idea. It is actually pretty good for skin, for keeping it pliable and such. And it turns out it's also pretty good for leather.
Oh, how'd you find that out?
Well, you know, I searched in. I took a deep dive into the leather care, and I was just curious whether petrolatum, because if you think about the things that people have used, neem oil, and the other one she mentioned,
mink oil.
Those oils are hydrocarbons, and they have a certain hydrocarbon distribution.
Yeah.
Which petrolatum is also a hydrocarbon, and it's going to have all of the same hydrocarbons that you're going to find in mink oil in petrolatum. Now, the big difference there is that petrolatum has all kinds of other hydrocarbons in it too. So you have a lot more than probably you really need. So maybe something like mineral oil might be a little bit better than, say, petrolatum, but I think if you wipe it off well enough, it could be fine for conditioning.
Very cool. I'd love to hear how it turns out, Vivian.
You know, Valerie, that reminds me of when I was working on the VO5 hairdressing brand. Our marketers got this idea. We ran a company contest where they said, figure out other uses for VO5 hairdressing. And you had just had to generate ideas of where else could you use it. And it turns out I came up with all these ideas. You could use it like on a squeaky door handle. Like if you have the hinges of a door squeaky, you put a little VO5 hairdressing in there, does it right up. You could use it on your bike chains.
We had something like that with Super Skinny Serum at Paul Mitchell. It wasn't a contest, but you know, just in the lab, we were laughing about, you know, us chemists, we know the different uses of the ingredients. And someone was like, oh yeah, I use it for my bike. And another person said they actually use it to coat their brushes for when they do a specific type of oil painting.
Oh, nice. Interesting.
Yeah.
There was one other idea that I had. Like if you get a scratch on wood, you could just rub in that VO5 hairdressing and it takes the mark away, at least temporarily.
Well, so, by the way, petrolatum is good at that too. I learned that working in the movie business. If you put a little scratch on a wood floor when you're on set, you just take a little swipe of your Carmex on it.
Wow. Wait a second. You worked in the movie business?
Who I did. Knew? Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
We'll save that for another time and move on to our next question. This question comes to us from a patron, Erica. She says, hey, wonderful beauty brains, I have a question about flat irons. When shopping recently, I realized there's a wide range in price, as well as what appears to be marketing claims regarding to materials like titanium, ceramic, iron, or certain coatings on the plates. Are there valid reasons for the different types of materials, and are there benefits to spending more for the higher-end models, which can cost as much as $500? Or is it just as simple as they all get hot like a refrigerator gets cold? Thanks. All right, flat irons and utensils in general. Hair utensils in general. Valerie, you have some experience in this regard, having worked on a salon brand for so long.
Yeah, I do. You know, there is a lot of marketing involved in the flat iron industry, and there's not a lot of science, at least peer-reviewed published literature on actual benefits of these different coatings on the plates to hair. I think a lot of it is marketing. But I also think it can be detrimental to use a junky flat iron on the hair, for sure. Because as you're flattening your hair, you're putting something, a very hot surface, on the hair fiber, and the heat is getting transferred to your hair. So you want something that is transferring heat evenly and is actually the temperature that the device says it is or says it's going to be, and something that can regenerate heat pretty quickly so you reduce the number of passes on the hair. So for example, if you set your flat iron to 400 degrees Fahrenheit, 200 degrees-ish Celsius, and you're flat ironing your hair, but you lose 70 degrees Fahrenheit over one pass of the hair, it takes a minute. Not a minute, but, you know, it can take a minute. It takes time for the heat to regenerate in the flat iron. And meanwhile, because you're not getting the heat that you thought you did, you're going to do more passes and more passes on the hair, which is ultimately really damaging. So I would probably say over material its ability to retain heat is the biggest item that I would look for. And, you know, the brand I worked on, the Neuro Smoothing Iron and the Babyliss Irons, I found in my work to be really, really good for that. They regenerate heat very quickly. And they're the temperature that they say they are, which is really good. But as far as the materials, you know, I think if you go with, you know, ceramic or, you know, these ion smoothing irons, you know, you should be fine. I don't think you'll be able to discern a difference. But the biggest benefit is the temperature.
And as far as buying a really expensive one, I imagine the main difference there is that a more expensive one will probably last you longer.
They typically come with a good warranty too. I wouldn't spend $20 on a smoothing iron. I probably would spend $100 to $200.
But not $500.
Not $500. That's out of control.
Yeah. And you know, it could be though, if you're gonna spend $100, you could just buy 5 of the $20 ones, and when it breaks you just get a new one.
Oh, but that'd be wasteful.
That would be.
Yeah.
All right, we have an audio question. Longtime fan, here is the audio question.
Hey, Valerie and Barry, I'm Seong, all the way from Nepal, and I'm back with another confusing question again. So, I came across with the sunscreen, and it's called Episoft Moisturizer with Encapsulated Sunscreen. And of course, it says it has encapsulated UV protectant ingredient. And since Perry is so skeptical about the term encapsulated, and it totally makes sense, the sunscreen has very less ingredient and doesn't have any fragrance, so that's why I really wanted to give it a shot. But I'm really curious and confused, what if the encapsulated UV actives don't burst open to protect my skin from the UV rays? So yeah, can you please make me clear, and is it safe to choose this kind of sunscreen or not? Thank you so much, you guys. I really love your podcast. Thank you.
Okay, fascinating. So basically, there's a sunscreen that says it has an encapsulated sunscreen. And if you've heard me talk about encapsulation on the show, I've always been a little bit skeptical.
Yeah.
Well, it's just that the problem is, if you've made the encapsulate strong enough to last through manufacturing, then it's going to be too strong, so it won't get delivered on your skin. And then if you make it weak enough to be delivered on your skin, it's not going to last in manufacturing. So I'm an encapsulation skeptic.
What about micro encapsulation, like the sunscreen?
It's micro. You know, this does bring up an interesting point about encapsulation, because what counts as encapsulation? Arguably,
is an emulsion encapsulation? You've encapsulated
right. Arguably, an emulsion in a micelles, and that would count as encapsulation. So I guess,
look at you. You could work in marketing.
I could. So that could be what's going on here, because I looked at the ingredients here, and it's a pretty standard sunscreen ingredients. And the most important thing to also look at is that when a sunscreen is making their claims of SPF values and their ratings, they actually have to conduct tests in an independent lab to demonstrate that that's what the consumer is getting. Now, there is some controversy about whether you're actually getting the number that's on there and whether people are doing the testing right, but let's just assume that they are, that you can't just outright make up a number and lie. You can't exaggerate the advanced technology you have, though, and call standard emulsion microencapsulation, right?
I would like to also argue this is not even an emulsion. I think it's a suspension where they've simply just trapped everything, because I don't see an emulsifier in here. I see polymers in the ingredient list, which we can post in the show notes.
That is a good point. The hydroxyl acrylate and the sodium acrylodimethyltorate copolymer. They're probably using polymeric emulsifiers, as we call them.
Yeah.
The associative thickeners. Yeah, so I don't know where they're getting the encapsulation piece of it. You raise a good point there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as far as whether it works or not, I would have faith in the SPF values, just not in the marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it works as a sunscreen. Yeah.
Our final question.
Hey, Beauty Brains. I wanted to ask about the Ordinary Eyelash Serum, which they have just launched, because I've been listening to you guys where you talked about lash serums in your past episodes. What could make this lash serum work and not others? It is the Ordinary Multi-Peptide Lash and Brow Serum.
Wow, the Ordinary's getting into the lash business, huh?
Very interesting. Well, if you've listened to all of our previous episodes about lash serums, or even listened to our last episode, episode 305, any lash or brow product is essentially using peptides, especially if it has the word peptide in the name, and it's peptide technology that vendors who, manufacturers who are making these peptides claim that there's some regenerability, if that's a word, to your brow hair or eyelash hair with their peptides.
Unless they're using the Bimroprost, the drug.
Correct. Yeah, they're actually not supposed to be really making these claims. You know, when they're using these peptides, because that's a drug claim, and the manufacturers of these ingredients, you know, they're not drug materials. So Myristoyl pentapeptide 17 is the first peptide that's present in this Ordinary product. That is a material that's used pretty widely. Anytime you're talking about brows, that's what the studies are on. Acetyl tetrapeptide 3 is a material that's known as Capixel. Some brands market that. And it has good scalp data when combined with red clover extract for helping redensify the hair, improving hair density. Huh. And then it has two other peptides present in it. So this is basically working based on peptides. And, you know, they threw some other goodies in there, like caffeine. You know, everyone knows caffeine's good for stimulating stuff, right?
And I just pour Coca-Cola right on my face. That's my treatment.
Yeah, you might get an exfoliation too.
Yeah, I might.
Pretty cool. So yeah, but mostly this is based on the peptide technology, and some companies choose to use that technology. I think most do, actually. Some don't, and they, you know, like the Avita regrowth product that we talked about last week does not use any peptides for that, but they use botanical extracts known through research. I'll use that term very lightly. Have some benefits.
Traditional or something. Yes. Well, you know, Valerie, I was curious about this. It's hard to keep up with all the latest technology and stuff. And I wondered, I know that the raw material suppliers have data that they present, and they're selling these chemicals to. Yeah, it's biased. And I'm saying, okay, well, let's see what's published in peer-reviewed literature about peptides and eyelash growth or eyebrow enhancement. And there was an article. I found a couple articles. The latest one I found was published in 2020 in the Journal of Dermatology and Clinical Research. And this article concluded that peptide extract solution is a safe and efficient treatment to enhance eyelash and eyebrow appearance without causing any major adverse reactions. And I was looking at it, and this was what they call an open label cohort study over a period of 12 weeks, which means it wasn't blinded and there was no control group. So I find that a little unsettling. And the study involved both a daily application of this peptide solution by the user, and then every 2 weeks, although in the article they said every fortnight, and I had to look up, what's a fortnight?
You know the capital of every country, but you didn't know what a fortnight was. So
you know, that
silly.
Reminds me, the last question was from somebody from Nepal, which was Kathmandu. Okay.
Show off.
Oh, there you go. And I actually did do my memory palace this morning, and I had to re-remind myself of two countries, Nauru and Palau. So I had to.
I won't fault you for that.
It is slipping, but you know, to keep all these things memorized, you gotta review them every so often.
Yeah.
All right, back to the question. This study involved a daily application of the peptide solution, but every 2 weeks they had a microneedling session to inject the solution deeper into the brows, presumably. And furthermore, they had 6 people as subjects in this study.
Wow, that's so many.
six people. So it's kind of a tiny amount. The study uses what they call, I learned about this, the Global Eyelash Assessment Rating System.
Wow.
The GEA is a validated 4-point scale with a photonumeric guide. So if your eyelashes are rated a 1, that means you have none or minimal eyelash prominence. If it's rated 2, that means you have moderate or eyelash prominence. A 3 is a marked eyelash prominence, and 4 is a very marked eyelash prominence. I think I would be maybe a 2 or a 3.
I feel like most people are moderate.
Yeah.
Like a 2.
Yeah. Well, I was looking when they did the research. You remember Latisse?
Yeah.
When they did the research on that Bimaprost, they used this Global Eyelash Assessment Rating. So they probably developed it for that. The average people in that study either had a 1 or a 2 rating.
Oh, that's so sad.
Well, a lot of people, when
they
did
that, their...
Well,
you want that, right? Because you want to show
the
growth.
When you're doing a study, Well,
obvious. I mean, it's so sad that they don't have eyelashes, but hopefully they did after Latisse.
Well, many of the people who were in that study were actually people who had went through cancer treatments, and that was one of the reasons they didn't have eyelashes. So anyway, back to this peptide one, they say using the peptide the treatment and the microneedling, by the way, they had about an increase of score of 1. So if you started the study as a 2, it would go up to a 3. If you started as a 3, it would go up to a 4. Yeah. You know, this is all kind of subjective, but, you know, that's what they published. The research did leave me with a lot of questions, though. First, why was it so small? Like, why would they only use 6 people?
Funding.
I looked at the studies that were evaluated effectiveness of the Bimaprost, and that was published in the 2015 Journal of Clinical Aesthetic Dermatology. They used 130 people, and they had a placebo control, and they didn't do the microneedling. So why would they need microneedling for this?
Yeah.
Get extra. And I'm always troubled by no placebos, not blinded. So I wouldn't say that the study here is like indicative of, this wouldn't be what I'd say a good study. This is a good preliminary study and says, okay, let's do further research because this might work. But you need more control. You need more people.
Good study design is so critical.
Absolutely. Also, the study, interestingly enough, was they used purified peptides from rabbits. So you're not going to get an anti-cruelty rating on this kind of product. So I'm not sure how this research really reflects the kind of things that you're getting in the ordinary product.
Yeah, well, those are synthetic peptides in the ordinary product. Who knows what the raw material suppliers modeled their peptide sequence off of? Maybe it was from purified rabbit peptide sequences. I don't know. It's hard to say, but they are synthetic. So that's good, I guess.
Yeah. So overall, just looking at the research, I'm pretty skeptical that you're going to see a noticeable benefit based on the evidence that I saw. But on the other hand, it's not unsafe, and it only costs like $15.
Minimal investment.
Might be worth
trying.
Yeah. It might be. I just wouldn't get your hopes up.
Well, the only way to know if it would work is to just do one eyebrow, right?
Yeah, and that's another thing. Why didn't they just do one eyebrow in this study? when you're doing a study and you want to prove that something's working and you want to reduce the chances of it showing it's not working, then you don't use a control.
So that's
easier.
I think that's it. That's all the questions we have today.
That is. Thanks so much for listening. Hey, the Beauty Brains are on Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and keep us ad-free, go to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe.
Also, if you can, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. That's going to help other people find the show and ensure we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer.
And if you have a question and you want to get your voice on our show, just record it on your smartphone and email it to thebeautybrains@gmail.com.
Also,
you can send us an email and we'll answer those kinds of questions too.
Yeah. Don't forget to follow us on our various social media accounts. On Instagram, we're at TheBeautyBrains2018. On Twitter, we're at TheBeautyBrains. And we have Facebook pages as well as a TikTok account.
We are squatting on TikTok and someday we'll publish something.
Huge shout out to Alex at Vreya Cosmetics. You can find her at VreyaCosmetics.com, V-R-E-A Cosmetics. Thank you so much for being a part of our first Patreon giveaway.
And thanks everybody for listening.
And remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks everyone. Kittens!